When Cookie Johnson's husband, NBA great Magic Johnson, revealed his HIV status in 1991, the MSU alumna turned her initial fears into a newfound mission. More than two decades later, she continues to inspire as an example of faith and perseverance. Earl Etha, Cookie Johnson, tells Spartan editor Paula Davenport how she got her unique name.
Yeah, my father. I was kind of named after him. His name was Earl.
Okay.
And they just kind of made up something to go with Earl, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So it's spelled E-A-R-L, like Earl, and then E-A-T-H-A. So I guess it's a feminine version of Earl.
So how did you get the nickname Cookie?
Well, it was just a nickname my mom gave me when I was a little girl. It really, I don't think it had anything to do with me. I think she was a fan of that TV show called 77 Sunset Strip. I don't know if you're old enough to know that show.
I am.
It was a very popular show, I guess, in the 60s. And there was a character on there. His name was Cookie, really. It was kind of kooky. And they had a little song, Cookie, Cookie, Lemon Your Comb. And I don't know. She just started calling me that. I have no idea why. And it kind of stuck because people could not pronounce my name. I would go to school and people couldn't pronounce my name. And I would just say, just call me Cookie. And I actually was called, it was, you know, Cookie until I started kindergarten. I didn't know that my name was Earletha until I went to kindergarten and she said, this is your name. And I'm like, what?
Why did you write your book? Because you didn't have to expose all of that and be vulnerable.
Well, it's very interesting. When I launched my company, my denim line, I did a lot of going around the country and doing personal appearances in all the department stores. And I just found that a lot of ladies came in and were saying to me, oh, my God, you're my idol, you and your husband. You guys have inspired us so much in my life with my, you know, husband or as a woman, period.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kept happening over and over. And, you know, my friends kept saying, you need to write a book because people, they see your life, you know, and they really admire your life. And seeing it has affected them. If you write this book, then it could probably have a good impact, you know, on others who, you know, have gone through something traumatic or, you know, just women who, you know, trying to make the right decision about their marriage or whatever. And so because of that, I decided that I would, you know, take the chance and write this book because it was about more than just me. You know, it was about affecting a lot of other women out there. Or families, because we went through a lot. And I've gone through a lot in my life, and there's so, you know, as you saw with all the different chapters, you
mm-hmm.
know, you talk about the relationship part, you know, on and off, and then finally getting married, and then boom, getting hit with, you know, the HIV the minute we got married, and trying to make it through there, through that, and then, you know, having children, and then you have a child that is LGBTQ, and it's, you know, and adjusting. So it's all adjusting, you know. And I'm sure that there are other people that were going through these things, and it's nice when you say tell your story for other people to know that they're not the only one,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how you made it through. So that was one of the main reasons why I wrote the book. And I wrote it at that time because I was just at a time in my life where the kids were older. They were, you know, in high school and junior high school, and I had more time on my hands. But also we were celebrating our 25th anniversary of having our foundation and
oh.
also, you know, of my husband being diagnosed with HIV and our marriage. So with all of that, you know, just going through all that and looking, you know, just looking back, I go, wow. Because, you know, when you're going through it, you're not paying attention. You're just going, my husband and I, we learned to focus forward, not backwards. So you're always focusing on let's get through this. How do we get through this? Let's make it through the next hurdle, you know, and going forward. And then when something like that happens and you do a celebration of 25 years, you look back and you say, wow, look at what we've been through and look at how we've made it through. You know, oh, my goodness. You know, and that's another thing. It just kind of like woke me up and to say, you know, this is a story to be told.
What do you think your purpose in the world is?
I wasn't sure until, you know, like my husband, the HIV and all that. And when he announced that he had the HIV, I didn't want him to announce it because I thought, oh, my God, you know, at this time, you know, this was the 90s. You know, when you mentioned HIV, you really, people just went straight to AIDS and you're going to die.
Right.
And we're going to catch it,
right.
You know. And it was really scary back then. So I thought that people would not want to be around us. You know, they would not embrace us. They would not want us at the restaurants, you know, whatever. So I thought, oh, no, you know, we can't make this big announcement. It's one thing to work and fight for it privately,
mm-hmm.
but to do it publicly, I thought was going to be tragic. You know what I mean?
I do.
And I tried to talk him out of it, but he told me, he looked at me in the eyes and he said, you know what? I have to do this because I need to go out and save as many lives as possible. People need to understand that this disease can reach, you know, anyone. Because, of course, at that time, people thought, you know, the big perception was that it was only a gay disease.
Right.
And it really wasn't, but you didn't hear a lot about the other people getting it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it was so important that he made that announcement. And when he did that, after that day, it hit me that my purpose was to be here by his side and to help him, keep him healthy, help him to achieve his purpose. And now I feel that my purpose is to continue to tell my story, to inspire others as far as women mostly, because I noticed after a while that more women were starting to get the disease than men for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, what is that about? And that's why that's when I started going out on speaking engagements and, you know, talking to women and women's organizations and different things about what we've been through, because it's so important for women to learn to protect themselves. You know, I think sometimes in relationships, because the males are more dominant, if they decide they don't want to use protection, the women, you know, are afraid to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's important to empower them to say no. You know, and so that is what I do right now. I do speaking engagements across the country, and mostly women's organizations, women's symposiums and different things, because I think it's really important to inspire and empower women to be strong enough to take a stand and to, you know, stand up for themselves. And especially now with this Me Too movement going on, you know, that all kind of, you know, works together. And it really makes me feel good that women are empowering themselves now,
mm-hmm.
you know, in all ways.
How difficult is it to raise children in Hollywood, California?
You know what?
Or L.A.
I think you have to always stay true to you and your roots of who you are,
mm-hmm.
you know, and with Irvin and I both being Midwestern people, Midwest people, we were pretty grounded people, you know, because we didn't come from, you know, all of the money and the glam and the glitz. So we try to keep the kids as grounded also when we were raising them, you know. So we stuck, you know, we kept a small, close group of friends that we spent time with, and people that we trusted, and people that were more like us.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent a lot of time with our families. I think that's super important to have a good village and a good foundation for your children.
Mm-hmm.
And even though most of our families were in Michigan, we sent the kids to Michigan every summer to spend 2 weeks with the family. It's been 1 week with the Johnsons and then 1 week with my mom in Detroit while we took a vacation.
That's neat.
We just tried every opportunity to stick in, you know, ground roots of how important family is and, you know, depending on each other and living as normal of a life as possible. You know, we did go to some of the big events, but mostly we just did normal things, going to the movies or just taking the kids to, you know, Chuck E. Cheese, things like that. And it's usually, you know, it happened more when they became, like, more young adults and teenagers and, of course, hanging out with their own friends, then they do end up, you know, going to more of the glitzy stuff. But at least we put that foundation in them. And it always comes back. Because I have my daughter come to me several times and say, Mom, some of these people out here, what kind of, you know, soul do they have? Like, she's really into, like, how, you know, they're just operating without feeling, you know, just doing things without understanding how they're affecting other people. And, you know, because we didn't raise them that way, you know, we instilled in them that you know, you have good values and you're always, you know, you're kind to people and notice others who are in need and help them, you know. So some of that you find out later, even though you think that it went out of the window, it comes back and it surprises you, you know, when they come back and say, I can't believe my friend does this and that and that. Who raised them?
And you've maintained really strong affiliations with your families here in East Lansing and Detroit. And how important is it to come home as adults to visit and to give back to the communities from which you came?
It's super important because, you know, like I said, we didn't come from money. And so for us to come back and give back to the community, you know, it makes us feel so good because we see in those faces of those kids, they were us. And, you know, and then all it took was somebody to, you know, give out a helping hand or somebody to talk to or give them advice, you know, or something. It's all it took for us. So why don't we, you know, pay it forward? And when we come home, it's like being home, you know, seeing our family. We love seeing our family and just hanging out, doing barbecues, just going to their homes. And, you know, it's great. We love it.
It can be tough to be on all the time. And I know before you go to events, you don't know. I mean, we're all human. You might have had a flat tire on the way or you made a wrong turn or you're worried that you're late. How do you collect yourself to project the best possible you that you can to inspire other people when you're up on stage or in front of a crowd?
Well, because, you know, you have to separate things sometimes, too, you know? You run into a difficult time to get there, but you have to remember what your purpose is also. You know, your purpose is to inspire others. And so that passion in you comes out, and then you have to let the other thing go and just sort of feed on that passion and go out and do that speaking engagement or talk to people. And, you know, and both of us, I think, feed off of other people's energies, you know, like, and if it's a good energy in there, then it's so important for us to give out good energy and then get good energy back. So you're like wanting that. And so that kind of sort of pushes you to get out there and do it.
How difficult is it being recognized when you go out in public? Is there ever a time when you just wish you could go, you were back in East Lansing and you could go wherever? Of course, that doesn't happen anymore either, but where you could just go and be unrecognized.
Actually, it's not that bad. You know, when you've dealt with it for so long, it's not bad at all. And I think it's all how you deal with it. Like, if you try to hide it, push people away, I think you make it harder on yourself. We just embrace it. You know, and when people come up, we just say hello. you know, if we have time to talk to them, we talk. If not, you know, it's a nice hello, but I'm sorry, I got to go. And just, you know, and most people are very respectful when you do that,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it's, but also at the same time, you know, it warms my heart to see that people still love Irvin so much, you know, after all these years of not playing or, you know what I mean?
I do.
And the whole HIV and all of that. And everywhere we go in this world, they just love him. And that makes me feel so good. So it doesn't bother me because we know how to maneuver through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just keep moving. You say hello. You take a quick. It's funny, the selfies kind of help because you just bend over, do a little selfie, and keep it moving. You never stop moving. That's Irvin's policy. He never stops moving. You just keep going. You want a picture, you got to run fast with me and take a picture as I'm walking.
Is there some way in which you could tangibly say that your experience at Michigan State has helped you become who you are today?
I grew up so much at Michigan State because all I knew was Detroit, you know, other than maybe going to visit Huntsville, Alabama. You know, and Detroit was a chocolate city then, and when we went to Michigan State, I had to learn to, you know, get along with other people. Not that I didn't, but it was just new to you, you know,
mm-hmm.
it was newness. And learning also to be on your own and not be, you know, under your mom's care, you know, when they were always there to take care of you. And
mm-hmm.
now you're making all the decisions. You got to make the right decisions, and you've got to, you know, do the studying. You've got to do it all. So, no, I matured a lot going to Michigan State, and because Michigan State was such a big school, it was scary at first, but then, you know, you just learn to figure your path out. And Michigan State also had a lot of, you know, like the Career Center helped me when I graduated. That was amazing, you know, to have that big Career Center that you guys have.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would have found a job if it wasn't for that. If it hadn't been for Michigan State, they helped me get internships through that work center. I did an internship the summer before I graduated, and that was how I got my job because they saw that I did that internship. You know, so Michigan State, you know, provided a lot of resources that helped me toward the end when I was about to graduate to help me, you know, start my career and get going.
Is there anything else that you'd like to tell people that we haven't talked about yourself or your family? Maybe some advice or...
My whole thing is when trouble comes around or something that kind of disrupts, you know, your norm, you know, don't be so quick to throw it away. You know, try to figure it out. Try to work it out. You know, try to face it head on and figure out, you know, is there a way to work through this before just throwing it away? And also, don't let it scare you and knock you down. And if it does, because there are things that knock you down, pick yourself back up. There is a future for you. Don't just believe in yourself and believe that there is a future for you. So pick yourself back up and figure out how to maneuver through that one step at a time. And that's what I always tell people. A lot of people think that, you know, it's, you know, if you can't just do it all at once, like get over it all at once or get through it all at once, then it's not worth doing and I'm just going to shrivel up. And I don't do that. You know, pick yourself up, push one step at a time. I always say, you know, just like the little engine that could, it just chugged up that hill a little bit at a time, chug, chug, chug until they got to the top of the hill. And I truly believe that if you have that type of tenacity to keep pushing through, you will get to the top of that hill. Don't give up.
That was Cookie Johnson talking with Spartan editor Paula Davenport. For more, see the fall 2019 issue of Spartan, the Michigan State University Alumni Magazine, and visit alumni.msu.edu.